oh, I said, well, I wrote this letter. And I look at this, and you know what? There's no resistance up there. This is called a breakout in the trade. So, if you're long, you stay long. I mean, it's this guy, yes, or what, Don DeLutis, or whatever his name was. He was an interesting guy. The only thing that was the matter with him was that he loved Ronald Reagan.
Something wrong with that.
Oh, I don't know.
That is a pain. See, I come from...
Have you ever read
So You Like Ronald Reagan? You come from California, so you don't like Ronald Reagan. And then you fake yourself out on the East Coast for several years, thinking that you still don't like Ronald Reagan. But I stayed in the Midwest, and I still like Ronald Reagan.
I read Reagan in his own hand, and I bumper sticker mentality.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe that's good news. Maybe we don't have to have a smart president.
We don't.
Well, I mean, I completely
look at you, the one you got now. I mean.
Well, anyway, this guy was very interesting. He, he said, he sees the debasement of the currency. He thinks that whoever's elected is going to debase the currency, which they're already doing, of course. And he also, he agreed with me. I'm going to put on my, I've got to put on the, On the handouts page, I'm going to put a menu and links to my letters. Because I wrote a letter on gold a year ago, 2 years ago, or something. And said that there was going to be a huge bull market. I didn't try to predict a top, but this guy was talking about $1,300 gold, $1,500 gold, or maybe worse, you know. And he was off, but what he was saying, particularly now, he said, well, we could have a correction. Well, first of all, let's say that we will have a correction. There's, between you and me and the fence post, the only question is, how big is it going to be? And he said we might have a correction of the, on the order of the 1987 correction, which was, hey, how you doing?
Good.
The 1987 crash was harrowing to live through, and it would be harrowing to live through now. So it's always a good idea to have some hedges. Hey.
Sorry for being here today.
Grab a seat somewhere. So, I was just saying before you guys came in, if you looked at this chart and you thought it was a weekly chart or something, you'd say, what would you say? But what would you say is happening right here?
We're still on a trend.
Huh?
We're still on an uptrend.
Yeah, but what else? We made a new high, right?
I'm sorry?
So we made a new high. What do when you make new highs? You buy them because there's no resistance up there. There is no defined resistance. I think back in 73, 74, Sugar had never, let's see, I'm trying to remember the exact, it's something like the all-time top in sugar had been about 31 or 32 cents or something. And so we made money on the way up to 31 or 32 cents and traded around here and there. And then sugar broke out to 33 cents and we bought a boatload of it. And the professionals and hedgers and everybody else was selling the hand over fist. They were willing to sell us as much as we wanted to buy, and we bought all that our portfolios could handle. And it went to 66 cents, which was something like, I think it was about, $65,000 return on about a $1,500 investment or something like that. So there's no resistance. So I wrote this letter, which you guys should read, the title of the letter is Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolfowitz? So I said in the letter, character is fate. And as somebody else said, it's like getting a Capone for a tax evasion. Anyway. So in the letter, you know, I just sort of surprised myself. I don't see any end of the bull market right now. I'm not a big believer in it, but I am a big analyst. And one of the things that a disciplined technician does is follow his methodology, even when it looks crazy. I mean, people thought we were crazy when we bought sugar at 33 cents.
Finding that it's that's unlogical, applies very well if you're long already, if you want it.
Well, that's certainly true. But
do you get in?
Go ahead. No, you're right.
So when it becomes difficult, do you get in?
Well, you're absolutely right. And the technique or the rule or the method is you buy just a little bit if you're not already in. Okay, or you stay out, because it's true that trends tend to continue, and it's also true that the longer a trend lasts, the more likely it is to change. Okay, but this trend shows no sign of abating. And I looked at in this letter here that I wrote that's on the web, I looked at the national debt, and I haven't totally correlated the two. I mean, what I should do is chart the debt on the Dow, but you know. Bush is on his way to double the debt, just like Reagan did.
Or Tip O'Neill.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, right, it was Tip O'Neill. It's Tip O'Neill and George the First. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
You do? Oh, what?
Well, I believe that Tip O'Neill is... Well, there's no reason to get political.
Sure there is.
No, it isn't.
Oh, come on, that's an excuse. Reagan could have vetoed any bill he wanted to.
No, Reagan went after... Reagan wanted to accomplish three things. He wanted to cut the size of government, he wanted to cut taxes, and he wanted to build a military. He got two out of three. He spent all his political capital on could have decreased the size of government, but he would have. Did a little deregulation.
Well, we
well, like I said in the seminar, my mom worked for him. She wanted to, her job was to eliminate the educational system, you know, like the educational department in California. They were anti-government. They didn't believe in government. They would have loved to eliminate it, but they didn't. They couldn't do it. So.
Well, we'll stick to the charts. Do the spiders perform identically to the S&P?
Pretty much.
The volume is different?
Pretty. Yeah. They have to track each other.
The volume is more novice looking.
Because I thought this S&P had... Anyway, I'll take
the pricing. The pricing is the same, but the volume... the volume amounts are different. So, let's say you want to see if there's because novices generally trade the S&P, the spiders.
There we go. That's what I mean.
So you don't really want to use
now,
do volume
that
analysis.
That hasn't made a new high, has it?
Oh, well, that's sort of interesting.
See, that was what I was talking about. We're close, but we're not quite there.
Well, there are anomalies like this that show up that I would say, and that's an interesting one. I'd really looked at, on the other hand, what if you did this? And what if you did?
Is that line on close?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think we may have a new high, huh? Well, let's see here. We could do this. I told you guys that. Okay, so this is high of 15.2521. Is that right? Am I right there?
All right. You know what? It's a little out of focus. Is it in focus for everybody else?
It's not in focus at all for me.
Okay. I take a shot at it.
Oh, good. Well,
thanks. If I can find it, let me know which one.
Well, I hate to tell you, we have made a new high on a closing basis.
All right.
Wait a minute. 1532 to 1525. So if you look at closes only, you do have a new high. Now, by the same token,
seems a pretty better.
Pretty thin new high, which
I can read that now.
Okay, great.
Pretty thin new high, but McGee sometimes took as a rule of thumb, he said, you know, he wanted to see a breakout of 3%, or he wanted to see a trend line broken by 3%, or, you know, so skepticism is still in order here, but
have you heard of the turtle soup trade? Mm-hmm. It's where you would short that once it went below the old high.
Did what?
You'd short it if it came down below the new high, I mean the old high.
Oh, this one right here?
Yeah.
If this came down, you'd short it?
You'd short it, yeah, and then you'd place the stop above the new high, just above it. That's completely against the McGee.
Well, it goes against the turtle trading, but it's a
Linda Raskin.
Sweet smart.
Yeah.
Linda Raskin.
Yeah, it's one of her trades.
That's one of her trades.
Well, I mean, if you want to bet again, if you think this is a double top, that'd be one way of playing it out.
Well, you know, that makes absolute sense about her now, doesn't it? Because she came on board because she's just young enough, right after the turtle traders were starting to go down. So she was making turtle soup out of the turtle traders. But it's I never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what you're saying.
Well,
and of course, you started here.
It's a bad practice to fade new eyes, I would say. I mean, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't do it as a habit. You know, but every once in a while, you know, maybe it works great.
Well, I don't know if you're thinking that the market's going to move sideways for the next so many years. I mean, you might think that this is...
Well, that's what we were just talking about. That, you know, there's no sign of this bear trend, bull trend abating, and there's... you look at the way Bush is accelerating the national budget deficit and national debt, and you know,
and the Federal Reserve, their money supply.
In the helicopters, the black helicopters.
Did you guys go to the?
Tell about helicopter.
Oh, well, I mean, just the guy that was there worked for Ronald Reagan. He was like the economic advisor for Ronald Reagan, and he spent a lot of time with Fed governors and Reagan, and they would tell them things that you never could believe. Like they'd say like tomorrow at 12 the market's gonna move because we're gonna bring the markets along.
We're gonna move it
like that. We're gonna move it. You know, and even well, that was the currency.
Or was it in Deutsche Bank? Was it Deutsche Bank in Germany?
Yeah, it was Germany.
The Deutsche Bank banker said, "Dude, we're gonna move it. Here, come on in the trading room." He goes in the trading room. They call up the central bankers of all the major countries in the world. And say, "Okay, you ready to go?" And they say, "Yeah, okay." So they go and they drive the dollar down.
Was that the Bank of Settlements, or is that something entirely different?
That's the Basel Bank.
Okay.
The Bank of International Settlements.
Okay, well, you wouldn't call him a conspiracy theorist because the guy claims that there was completely effort around him. I mean, he was talking about all these things that were going on. he just had an idea about everything. And he basically said that he's a cycles guy, and he believes in the 50-60-year cycle, or the Chondriatif, or cave wave, or whatever you want to call it.
The long wave.
And he's basically saying that we have sometime in the 2020s will be the end of this inflationary, cheap money supply, spendy government, and that's when it will end, and it'll lead to some sort of big print of money, and or there'll be a complete debasement of the currency,
and a severe recession,
and it'll be something like Brazil, or in between what happened with the UK and what happened with Germany in the 30s.
Well, I make this comment about cycles. They're interesting. And I think it's a bad idea to trade off of it. Mm-hmm. The best thing today is take all that with a grain of salt and look at what's happening. That's what the whole business of what I'm about here is just the direct experience. Mm-hmm. Okay, the direct experience of the market, the direct analysis of the markets without, first of all, I mean, after you do this, you may very well want to have some algorithms. You may very well have mechanical trading systems. It's great. But your brain should be trained to enable trends and detect the status of the market so that you can know where you're at. If you know this, you can see when your systems go haywire. And systems go haywire. I mean, the systems that for us made 119% a year in the 1970s trading futures, trading commodities, late 79, 80, they started suffering the death of 1,000 cuts because the rhythm of the markets changed. The rhythm of the markets changed. And
okay,
this mechanical system, see what, take a loss, take a loss, take a loss, take a loss, take a loss. In the previous markets, it was take a loss, take a loss, take a loss, get a big hit.
Okay, now, when that was going on for you, you didn't look at daily events, political events, and then, okay, this is what's going to happen, so we should pull back our systems, right? I mean, you just kept the systems going. And after the fact, you may look at what a political event might have done that could have caused something, if at all.
Well, what was the political event of 1929?
Well,
there wasn't one.
There wasn't one, right.
It was just, it was the end of the psychological, you know. The only thing that led to the crash in 29 was the Black Monday happening because of Black Thursday, because there was a huge drop, and then the psychology changed.
There was a structural reason. I urge you to read John Galbraith's book, The Great Crash.
The Great Crash in 1929.
Terrific book. And basically, what our clever financial community had done, the great houses of Wall Street, had put leveraged investments in the leveraged investment trust. Okay. So these things literally had been pyramided to the point at which
what happened that Monday though?
What happened that Monday?
What was the political event that occurred?
There wasn't any specific political event. It was just like the same thing ended that investment mania that ended the tulipomania, which was Bernard Baruch and a few smart guys figured out, and then some more guys figured out, and then some more guys figured out. And that's what happened.
And the same thing for 87, and there wasn't
Well, 1987 was 18, pure and simple investment manager panic. 17 investment managers. The SEC, the Brady report. In fact, my old buddy Blair Hull was, before the Brady report came out, they said, well, the big guys stepped in and kept the market from tanking. And they did the Brady report and said, well, you know, who bought the bottom of the market? Blair Hull. Why did Blair Hull buy the bottom of the market?
Because he sold it.
Blair Hull bought the bottom of the market because over the weekend, he and Lester Loops, his partner, got together and studied what had happened in these panics. And recognizing the same things that make the Wyckoff panic model work, they said, if they halt the trading, we want to be long on the halt. They came into the XMI pit. Blair and Lester were in the pits because their brokers had been wiped out. They came in and they offered the XMI futures. And Lester bought them. They offered him at 135, and Lester said, I'll give you 134. And he said, okay. And sold him thousands of them. And right after he did this, the other market makers looked around, and he looked at Lester, and he said, can I have some of those? And Lester said, I'm sorry, I got to have them all. And banks, they closed the markets, and, you know, it was up, 200 points the next day, they open. Next time they open. I mean,
did you buy the precise bottom or what?
Yeah. The absolute bottom. It's in the Brady report. Okay, so what was he doing? He was being a technician.
Didn't the Brady report also say that it was trend traders that using your computer program?
Oh, well, no, the other thing that exacerbated the 1987 crash is that one of my board members had developed an academic portfolio insurance scheme. Mm. Portfolio insurance scheme said if the market goes down 2%, then you sell some S&P futures to hedge your portfolio. If it goes down another 1%, you...
That's just like, if something goes down, you sell it. It's technical analysis.
Well, but no, the hole in the theory was that there was not that much liquidity in the markets. So when they started stepping into, when the market started falling, they started stepping into the markets to sell S&P futures. They were selling thousands of S&P futures into a market that couldn't support it. It's very much the same problems that kill long-term capital management.
Aberrant just last fall.
Hmm?
Aberrant, when you got into natural gas.
Right. Well, let's see. Aberrant, was there a...
It was pretty much...
They were just on the wrong side of the market, weren't they?
Yeah, he was leveraged on the wrong side. He called the market wrong. He was.
But it wasn't a question of market liquidity, was it?
Well, it was when he was trying to get out of it.
It was? I haven't studied that one. I don't know the exact details of it. Anyway, are we missing somebody?
Ted Tosos.
It's not here.
Yeah, don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay, so last week we looked at, let me sort of define the vector of what's going on here. the past couple of sessions we worked on this drill, which is in the process of analyzing a trend and learning how to use a rigorous method, not an algorithmic method, almost algorithmic, 95% algorithmic, really, an algorithmic method to follow a trend and learn to advance our stops on a regular procedure so that when the market turns, as it always does, then we'll be taken out with a lot of day profits. So we're going to do this exercise. We're going to do this again here. So analyze this. And now, at the end of last, now I don't think you saw this. Did you see this?
No.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to be a little behind. This is the way. This is a method that was developed by John McGee, and then I developed it. I've been trying to articulate it for some years. I've been working on what I call stair stops. I've been working on what I call stair stops because, you know, you draw the stop line underneath this that looks like stairs. So we're going to look at, we're going to do a quick analysis of this, and if you can see that the analysis that, so what you're supposed to do with this P piece right here, you're supposed to make the same analysis you did before. You know, find the trends, find the, you, since you've already got some experience of basing points, find the basing points, put a 5% filter in there, see where you would have a, see where you would have a stop, and see what you would be doing on this day right here, which is at the end of the chart. When you get finished with that, and some of you may finish sooner than others, so when you get finished with that, take one of these cards, put your name on it, and put whatever your name on the other side, I'll put under your name your purpose or goal in taking the course. And then on the other side, put down what you think the three most important things you want to learn are. And those three things can be anything. It could be, you know, I want to learn how to trade the turtle system. I want to learn how to... I want one of those systems that makes 50% in 24 hours. But it can be psychological, it can be technical, it can be you can be specific, it can be general. The idea is to give you and me a benchmark so that I see where you want to go. Because as I said when we started this course, this is not a canned course. This is an interactive course. So somebody brings up an interesting question, based on my experience, I see is important to the group. Then we'll pursue it. In every year, you know, we wind up doing some different things. What we're doing right now is the absolute cornerstone of technical analysis. So when you finish making a decision, or when you finish making your analysis, raise a hand, or better, so write down your analysis. Write down whether you're long, short, in, out, pyramiding, whatever, and then come and get this chart right here, and re-examine your analysis. Are we taping? We got anybody we're taping for? Are you taping?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's all right. Is that picking me up from there?
Yeah, sure.
Good.
Sure,
just.
Okay.
Basically, talk to essentially about one method, which raised basing points based on new highs and weighted lows. And I said that the more conservative variant was just to raise stops based on the weighted lows. Okay.
Yeah, you're tighter.
Yeah, what's more conservative? Okay. So that's what I call variant one. Variant two is where you raise basic points based on both criteria, wave highs, new wave highs, and wave lows. Okay, but let's. One reason I teach this because it's easier. when you throw in the knuckleball, people have trouble hitting it.
So McGee is wave highs.
Well, he's both.
And
both.
He's both. I split the procedure, and I also found another variant of the procedure.
Which third one. Mm-hmm. So which one do you prefer?
The conservative one for 99% of the people.
Only the...
Yeah, only the white lows. Because I've seen markets where you try to set a stop based on a new high. Okay. So you ratchet your stop up, and that's just at the time when volatility is accelerating. So they come back and get your stop, and they go on.
Oh. So the weight low is it's more long term.
Yeah.
Okay.
More conservative.
Cool.
Less likely to be chased out of the trend.
Well, simply more conservative, more risky because the stop's lower. So it's more risk. More risky.
What's the greater risk? Being chased out of
being chased out of the greatest trend in the world?
Right. That'd be a huge risk. And that was a pretty good trend too, and I got chased out of it.
It's a one-armed economist, correct?
Right.
Once you're in the money, it's no risk at all.
Right.
I don't really look at it that way, but once you're in the money, it's a lot more fun. How are we doing? We're getting there? You guys, we're Dogo. Bill, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Bill. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, Ted or
some tapes for you.
Oh, great.
You could program this easily, I think.
Good help. HTML.
Well, you could do it easier. You'd have a lot more steps in it, probably.
Do an HTML on the end.
Basically, carry a little mini
wave
low. So you can kind of keep it going up and up.
The hard part would be the wave low.
Right.
And you... This is what my wave low looks like.
You have to keep
it really
high.
Duh! And then it comes and retraces. And then it goes 1, 2, 3. And then that's really good.
Yeah.
So you have to have enough time for us.
Right. And okay. Pull back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think I'm Ronald Reagan that. Year. I can't remember. My website address.
As long as you don't have to test it.
Actually,
maybe that is good.
Yeah. What?
Back here.
Arms for hostages?
Well,
no.
This is really easy.
Okay, how are we doing? Have a big clear close to... Let's take about 5 or 6 more minutes, and then we'll go on from where we are there. Don't tell them the answers. Thank you.
So I'm looking at this.
So you're looking at that, and that is the result of... No, this is...
This is last week.
Okay, this is... All right, so this is the first exercise we do.
So I'm looking at this, and I'm saying...
Okay. Okay, we sort of completed or semi-completed that. Are we where we can talk about it? Okay, here's the answer. Here's the answer, and here is. Here's a narrative of what's going on in the chart.
Is it two pages?
Right, it's two pages. Bill just raised a point. I don't know whether it's let me say first of all, hundreds of hours went into this, and that doesn't mean that there won't be errors. And in fact, hundreds of hours went into McGee's chapter 28, or thousands. I mean, God knows how much time went into his figuring out this procedure. I mean, you know, the first time you do something, like. The first time you do something is like, first time you give form to something, you know, it's like God striking lightning on the earth. I mean, it's like Tao, you know, and this is one of the things I was talking about, that knowing how to see. I mean, Tao, in an age when there's no data, there are no charts, there's no, you know, it's just a chaotic, primitive mess. Tao has the perception to see that the market works in waves. And so after that, it's like Newton. You stand on the shoulder of giants. So McGee does something like that. McGee and Edwards and McGee look at it, and working on the what Dow did and Hamilton did and what Schaubacher did, they basically compile a language, a grammar of the market, okay, which we'll look at more here, but. Part of that grammar, or part of the advanced grammar, or part of the, let's say, the advanced semantics of dealing with that, is this procedure here.
Can I ask a question then?
Sure.
Maybe using the board will help me ask it.
Okay.
So, let's suppose we have a new high, and then we have some lows following that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we got it going back up. We have 1, 2, 3 outside days
away
from this low.
Right, right.
So here's the point where I think I may be confused. This being the third outside day.
Yeah.
Is this the basing point, or
no,
is this the basing?
That's the basing point.
Okay, but I have that confusion.
Okay. Well, that changes everything, doesn't it? I mean, now it doesn't look so far away to you. Okay. Look. Okay. Now, here's what I want to say. I have had in this course, and in Berkeley, I have had very, very, very
bright students and seminarians. And you would be amazed at how very, very bright people wrestle with this question. And how I have wrestled with teaching. And so on the web, at the handouts address, I'm going to put the basic point exercises, okay, unmarked. Okay, so you can download those, print them, and work out where the basic point is, and then look at the stair stops book, or if you don't have the stair stops book, I'll give you the answers. Okay, and so you'll be able to look at those and see each one of them, and those charts, the blank charts that you can work on as an exercise, and the solution to the exercise is, okay, are all of points in this chart. Okay, so you'll see a blow up of this where you see 12 and 13 on this chart. You will see that blown up so that you just see the 10 or 15 days around it, and it's marked, and you will take it and you'll say, that looks a bunch of basic point to me, and so bang, 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 and then you look at, you'll have the answer right there. You say, hey, okay, I did it right, or I got a different answer. Is it because the city screwed up, or is it because I screwed up? Okay, and it's entirely possible that as I say, if you want to be an author, there's a basic sanity test you have to take, and if you're sane, you don't qualify. You have to be willing to bang your head against this material for hours and hours and days, and then go back and discover, oh my God, you made an error. Everything has to be recalculated. So here's this problem right here. Okay, that we saw, and here's the narrative, and we have a key to it. And what I said was, and what I have said is that if you do your charts like this, you do your working charts, the chart, chart of your something you're going to invest in. You do this on it. You're going to wind up seeing a lot more than if you just marked a few lines on it. If you key the events on there, okay, and in fact, you can even, you don't just have to key technical events. You can say, okay, there's something weird, a gap happens or something weird happens on the chart, and you make a number on it, and on your key you say, they shot Reagan today. Damn. Bad aim.
Hurts, man.
Bad example. Okay. Well, I like to say the reason the market crashed in 87 was because the rumor of Reagan's senility filtered through the financial community. Okay, so here we are with this this question. Okay, the basic question of, what's a trend? What's a trend? How do you recognize it? How do you manage it? How do you invest in it? How do you avoid being a motley fool? Okay. How do you avoid buying Amazon at 6 and watching it go to 84 and then go back to 9? Okay, that is the basic question. How do you avoid being the Cisco engineer who didn't know how to draw lines on the chart so that his options are worthless while the guy in the next cubicle, Dilbert, is Dilbert sold his options at the top? Okay? And this is the answer. This is an answer. It's not the only answer. It's not a method that will work in every stock, but it is so basic to the understanding of trends and waves that invariably, did I tell the story about the email I got the other day?
The what? Yeah.
The email I got the other day from the guy that I had in 1999.
No.
The subject line was, "You win, I give up."
Fine. No.
So, "You win, I give up. 6 years ago, I took your course, and I sniffed at it, and I thought that the way to analyze stocks was the fundamentals and the earnings and the cash flow and this and that." He said, "I'm sorry, I didn't listen to you." He said, "Now I use technical. I make a fundamental analysis, but I use the chart for my buying and selling." this is a true story. Okay, so.
So you're saying that the stair stops is not good for all stocks. Is there a way to know which stocks it's not good for?
You will absolutely see it. You'll absolutely see it. But I'll show you something.
Maybe when you try to use it, you'll see why it...
Yeah. No, when you look at charts, you'll see.
Back-test it.
Yeah. Okay, this works like a charm in a trending market. Okay? But if you got wide...
Jumping volatility.
Well, you won't last. I mean, but... Before you ever get into the market in the first place, you study, you say, "Hey, look," you look at it, what you're going to say when you get finished in this course, is you're going to look at the chart and you're going to say, "I like this issue and it's in a trading range right now. I think I'll define where it's going to break out, and when it breaks out, I'm going to buy it. And when it breaks out and I buy it, then I'm going to calculate the basing point, and I'm going to set my stop, and if it comes back against my stop, I'm going to be out of the trade. If it progresses, then I'm going to find a new basing point when there's a down wave. I'm going to raise my stop, lock in my profits. Okay? If it comes back and gets you, you're out of the trade."
So it's good that I'm focusing on exit before the entry, because usually people do the reverse. But let's say you're trying to get into a position. I guess ideally you'd want to get it. I mean, I always go back to Wyckoff. On a spring.
I like Wyckoff.
Or on the first
break. Define a spring.
A spring is
not everybody here has taken Wyckoff.
A spring is. According to Wyckoff, there's basically a cycle in the markets of it first starts with a selling climax, and then you have and then there's also the premise that there's such a thing as smart money that are taking positions before the novice money and the technician and whatnot, and they're doing certain things, and you can detect some of their movement. So on the first thing you can identify on a chart is the selling climax, and then at that point, you can, by looking at the volume and the price, you can see a reaccumulation. And before they take the market up and mark up the price, there's generally a spring. And the spring is a steep retracement back towards the selling climax on a light volume, and sometimes it can go all the way down to the selling climax low. Sometimes it goes even just a little bit further, just to completely toy with everybody. And sometimes it can be a little bit more, there was examples of it in the S&P chart where there was one spring where it went down and it just kissed the previous low and then shot up again. And then right when we invaded Iraq, there was a really light spring and then it shot up. But a spring is like one of the best trades that you can get if you can identify to buy it. But
testing. I'll get you a graphic of a spring.
Right. Okay. Because it's in the consolidation of the range. All right, in this particular case, as I say, emphasizing this as a Platonic model, as it were, let's say what we did here, okay, we've been through this, but we identified what is basically a consolidation formation, which could be called a rounding bottom or a scallop. And that's
just what it says. It's just this little thing. Now, these rounding bottoms exist on all kinds of scales. There's like a, depending on how you want to look at it, when you read my letter on gold, you'll see that you can look at the gold market as having, as I remember, a 9-year rounding bottom or a 16-year rounding bottom, which is huge. Okay. Right here we just have, you know, some months going on. Then we get this volume at 3, then we get the breakout at 4. And at 4, we find the bottom of this formation, the scallop, or the rounding bottom here, and we compute 6% below that bottom to place that first stop, that first stair. At 5, okay, so then we get an up wave from 4 to a point that's not marked there. We can make a high, then this business between 4 and 5, sometimes technicians call drift. But it has the same import as a down wave. At 5, we don't have any lower prices. And then we get 3 days away from that low at 5, and we raise our stop to 6% under the basin point at 5.
So would you go long, like, could you, if you didn't get long at the break of the scalp, would you go long at some of the
absolutely. In fact, there I've known guys who do that. I've known guys who watch the breakout and wait for the pullback, because they're paranoid. Sometimes you don't get a pullback. But if you really, you know, if you're convinced of your case, let's say you can build your systems or your methodology around taking the breaks. Well, I'm going to talk about that later, about the exact methods about it. Right now, I'll just stick to this. Okay, but I'll talk about that later. So 5, then we begin to get some heavy action after 5, and we follow the market up. You can see between 5 and 6, there are 2 or 3. we're getting longer range days. Okay, we got building volume. That's not keyed here. It could be if you wanted to. Volume, longer range days, and then we make a high there, and we have a couple of days of pullback, and then we come back. Let's say, if you were looking at that, you look at those 2 days of pullback, you'd say, there's a down day, but it's not really enough for you to say that it's a significant down wave. In general, what you want to see is a significant down wave. In other words, you want to see enough to see that the reaction, the true reaction has occurred. And generally, that's going to take longer than a day or two. Although, I have had trading partners who have used a day or two as a down wave, as a basin point, or as an anchor point for a trend line. And extremely successful. Okay, but right here we're talking about a longer term method. So at 6 we see the down wave that exhausts itself at 6. And then bang, the thing takes off, and we get 3 days away right away. And our next stair is there 6% under 6. Now,
we have a sharp increase, a sharp reaction at 7. And you can see from 6 to 7, and the down wave, it, compared to the wave, to the up wave, is sufficient to convince you that you probably have a basing point there. Now, you might also begin to think, okay, you might also begin to think, hey, this market's really, really heating up. I mean, look at the volume, look at the price rise here. You know, is it blowing off? Is it coming to an end? Because you're in that block where the 6 and the 7 occur, you just have a few days and you have an almost vertical price rise. But then you make a new high. What you'd like to see in the marking of trends and the marking of basing points is you'd like to see a wave low, you'd like to see a new high, you'd like to see a higher wave low. Okay. That's the pattern of a bull trend. So at 8, you get a new basing point, and at the same time, you draw this trend line at 10, which is drawn through that point. through six and nine, and you can see that it continues on. So, now here, you will see this illustrated in the charts that I'm going to put on the handouts, page. Okay, so what happened here? At 9, okay, we got a basing point at 8, and then we didn't make a new high, but we had a further recession. And 9, if you had been doing what most people do, which is setting their stops right under the low or at the low, you would have been taken out by the retracement at 9. But you're not taken out because your stop is down there on the stair. Okay, so your basic point got tested right there, and your procedure got tested right there, and it worked. Okay, so I said, okay, there is, after 9, there is a thin new high, and the point at 11, which, as I said, was a tenuous basing point. So, Tom asked a question a few minutes ago. Well, you know, how much is algorithm, and how much is hard and fast, and how much is qualitative or judgmental? And Dan said, yeah, well, it's fine to be judgmental, just as long as you're judgmental all the time in the same circumstances. And so that you're judgmental or qualitative before the occasion, okay? In other words, if you try to look at it in real time and say, I'm adjusting my basing points, you're dead meat.
So what about whether we're making tables?
Well, very slim new high. Very shallow down wave. Okay, just a little. Let's say just a little. You know, but qualifies. Okay, does qualify. A new high was made. Higher low was made. No lower prices than the low at 11. Then an advancement all the way up to the high that precedes 12. Okay, 12 is a candidate for a basing point. Okay, there's a fairly good retracement in terms of, let's say, that might convince you that it's a basing point. You watch it and then you look at it and you see there are a couple of days away from it, and then a lower low is made. So 12 is a failed basing point candidate. 13, there are no lower prices, and prices begin to advance again. And 3 days away, you raise the stop that has 18 resting on it.
So, can you say a few words about why 3 days is key?
Well, McGee said 3 days. And I know how he got to the 3 days. He got to the 3 days based on about 30 or 40 years of experience of looking at about 7,000 or 8,000 charts a year. No, probably 7,000 or 8,000. But he had a chart room. He must have had 7 to 10 people in there, everybody from grandmothers to teenagers, hand charting away. So I think McGee said 3 days based on experience. What I said was that this may be a parameter. Okay? You may find a case or a stock where 4 days works better. Or 5 days.
And it's not consecutive days, right? It's any 3 days.
No, any 3 days before a lower low is made. You'll see that in the charts and angles. So it's 83 days. It could occur in 3 days, or it can occur in 3 weeks. By definition, you can see how by definition, if it took longer than 2 or 3 weeks, there'd be something wrong, right? What would be wrong?
You just call into question the trend itself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It means that the price has drifted sideways. Okay. And if the price has started drifting sideways and you didn't confirm that basing point for 3 weeks, then you'd look at it and you'd leave your basing point where it was, okay? But you would also start looking at it as a consolidation or as a trading range. You'd say, the trend is so what's going to happen? Because you might even in your methodology adopt some other procedures. You might say, okay, if that goes on for 2 or 3 weeks or a month or 6 weeks, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to treat this like a consolidation pattern. And I'm going to watch if it breaks down out of the pattern on strong price action or on strong volume, I'm out, whether it gets my basic point stop or not. See what I mean? So it's an adaptive procedure. It's a dynamic procedure. What I'm trying to do is program your brains. You can go program a computer. But if you see this happen, if you recognize this happening, you're a lot better off than a computer, because a computer can't see it happening. Okay, a computer might sniff it out with the moving average system, because it might break the moving average on a filter or something, you know. So that happens too.
Would you use judgment to, if you lack confidence in the trend, to tighten the stops, or would you just take comfortable with the operation?
I would get my methodology and stick to it. Okay. Now, and the more experienced you get, the more adaptive, the more flexible, the more let's say in the moment you can be. Okay, but as you get experience, then you have the confidence to do that. For example, you're going to see something in this chart right here where that very principle comes in big right at the end of the chart. So here, okay, so we, and I think I'll
I'll move along fairly quickly here. Okay, so we get, so at 12 we had a test of a basic point. 14, okay, if, okay, so here's one of those anomalous, amorphous situations. 14, we've got a, what looks like a drift sideways, we've got a low, and is it a basic point? Well, not really, you know, so we're sitting here saying, what kind of rule do we have? Well, if we have the rule that we have to have a higher high before we can make a new basic point, that clarifies the point at 14. And as I said, I think that's a good rule. And anyway, it's proved out by the fact that you get the new high, and then you have to come back, and if you had made that point at 14 a basic point, it would have been not a good technical decision. Okay, so 16 is the basic point. And then spurts up, makes a new high, gets a downwave to 17 where there are no lower prices, and then it takes off, and what we get is what's called a flag. Okay? Now, if you look in the book, and you should, look in the book, look up flag, read what a flag is, and you see that a flag is a consolidation pattern that hangs off a flagpole. In other words, you get a straight run up, you get some little sideways activity there which can have the shape of a pennant, or it could have the shape of a square, and technicians call it a flag. And if you read McGee's procedure, you see that McGee says you don't just have to have a downwave to establish a basic point. You can have a continuation pattern. You can have a flag. Okay, so there are things like that that can also be basic points. So when it breaks out of that basic point, you find the low point of the pattern, and you compute a new stop. Okay, and then you make a new high, and you have a short downwave which doesn't amount to enough to establish a basic point. Another high, and then at 22, you get another basic point. Now, notice what's happening here as we progress. It's getting faster and faster, okay? The waves are coming at us faster. The size of the waves, the average, the range of the days is longer, okay? And now, at 22, 24, and 25, we get basic points that are just like, you know, within a few days of each other. Bang, 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 bang. Something's up. Okay, so your antenna should be raised up here. Something is clearly going on. Now, if you had been conversant with this market to begin with, you would have known that something was going on. Anyway, at 25 is that last point there, just slightly to the left of the 25, you can see the downwave. You compute your stop there, and then you see 26, okay, 26 is a is a support line. Then at 27, okay, at 27, you see the market come through. Did everybody get one of these?
No.
Okay. At 27, you see the market come through.
We don't actually have 27 on our chart.
You don't?
No.
You're supposed to.
It's only printed at
21. Here's 22.
Oh.
You guys got 27?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so here at 27, and look at this chart, this is the close-up. Okay? I like to look at the chart. You know, I look at charts, I usually look at, you know, like a month. I mean, if I'm in a trading situation, I may be looking, well, I may be looking at 2 weeks or 3 weeks or even shorter. Okay. Normally, I look at about a 3 month chart, and I switch back and forth between the time scales because looking at it too close up is ruins your perspective. But sometimes you have to look at it close up, especially when this occurs. You see figure 18, the close up at the end of chart 29. This is, okay, so you look at this and you say, good night, what on earth is this? First of all, it pierced your stop at 27. But even if it hadn't pierced your stop at 27, this is a case where something is so clearly aberrant that you'll be out anyway. I mean, look at the range of the day, look at the volume of the day, look at the 2 days volume before that. Something's really screwed up here. And what's screwed up is it's October the 19th, 1987, and an apple is about to go through the floor. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. So all kinds of things are going on here. Now, there was a. Remember this guy? There's this guy who, the tracker, what's he called? Tom Brown. You know the guy that does the tracker?
What's the tracker?
Well, he's a tracker. He leads
bad guys?
These,
huh? Hunting bad guys, you mean?
Or? No. He's an outdoorsman, and he gives these...
Hunting bear.
Survival books?
Yeah, he does survival books. He gives these seminars and these camps and things. And he talked about how he learned tracking, learned skills of the outdoors from a figure he called grandfather, but who was actually, his name's Brown, Tom Brown or something like that. Anyway, he and grandfather went on a walk. And when they got finished the walk, grandfather said, well, what'd you see? So started telling us, for 30 minutes, he told me, okay, I saw these flowers, I saw these trees, I saw these grasses, I saw these birds. And at the end of 30 minutes, grandfather said, you didn't see very much, did you? And then proceeded to talk for 3 hours about the hike they'd just taken. And the same thing is true here. Okay? You can walk through this chart, and you can see very little, or you can see very much. And if you use this system of notation, and this system of analysis, it would be inevitable that you would see and understand more. It follows as the night doth the day, as it was Polonius said. So you can see when you start dissecting this and pulling apart. I mean, you can go farther than this. Okay. You can also make analysis. You can see how just looking at it, you see how things occurred in here. Okay, you can see that the range of the volume picked up, especially here towards the end. The thing about volume is, there's some people who think that, who say you can trade on volume. To me, volume is an adjunct to what's going on. And volume is also often an important alert call. Okay, like here at the end. In fact, in fact, if I still had a staff, we used to do this at Options Research. I mean, we saw a spike in implied volatility, we might just go out and blindly buy something. So we were tracking volatility all the time. Well, you can too. I mean, you can say, if the average true range or the average volatility of this is supposed to be 0.30 or 0.25, and all of a sudden it goes to 0.40, hello, wake up, what's going on? What may be going on is somebody's getting ready to clean your plow. Okay. So you look at the feature. I mean, you make this analysis. You see, first of all, you see patterns. First of all, okay, you see a scallop, you see drift, you see flagpoles, you see consolidation patterns here between 12 and 16, or really before 12, from 12 to 16. You see a consolidation pattern, a kind of a trading range pattern. See a resistance line set up at 15. You see a resistance line set up at 18. Okay, then you see flags. You see flagpoles. See up waves, down waves. You see run days, runaway days. You see volume spikes. You see volume tail off. I mean, there's a walk through the forest in this one chart. There's a walk through the forest in any chart. Now, let's see. What happened after that was, there's McGee's chart. This is what happened after that. Okay, this is where 27 is on the chart. Okay, so Apple took about you can see in 2 or 3 days, Apple was down 50%. And that was not unusual. Everything was down. Let's see, I think the extent of that sell-off was 43%. Yeah, that's true.
But you said before, if those guys down there would have been able to chart that they'd be all safe and everything, like the Dilbert cartoon, but they wouldn't have been.
Right.
Because they were so committed. I mean, you mentioned Cisco. I remember Harvey Berban, who used to go down there and give seminars. Did I tell you this story? At the top of Cisco was 64 or 80 or something, I don't know what it was. It was an island reversal. And he used to go and he'd give a seminar here at Golden Gate, mm-hmm. and then he'd go down in the peninsula someplace around Palo Alto and give another seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Saturday he went down there, Cisco was at this island reversal. It was just coming at the end of that, 60-some or 80. Mm-hmm. And he said, folks, it's time to short Cisco. Now, there was then a break, like today, you go and have your coffee. I'd say out of the 100 people that were in the room, about 20 came back. Now, of course, Harvey felt very bad about this because he thought he wasn't being dynamic enough. And if you know him, I mean, he's a very dynamic speaker. So this hurt his personality, his feelings that they wouldn't come back. But the problem is, he never realized that he was speaking to the gods there, you know. He was, it wouldn't matter.
Speaking to the guys with the options.
That's right. And there was no way that they could short Cisco, because that was like spanking themselves. I mean, they were so loyal to Cisco, it would be evil to short Cisco or to sell him. To even sell him, it would be evil. So they couldn't do it. So they had to leave the seminar. And of course, then he gave a class the next day, and I remember saying, he had me stand up at the blackboard, and he drew, technically analyst, you know, half of this and half of that, where it would go. And he said it was going to go to, he had me draw on the blackboard exactly what it was. And I remember the answer was like $11 or $12 is where Cisco was going to end up.
Yeah.
And of course, within the year or months, that's where it ended up. But he called it to them. And so as a result, they're so loyal to the company, there would be no way that they could possibly do that. No way.
Well, I said one time, you get married to a stock that the bill could be excessive.
That's right. By the way, he's back. You remember you were asking about
him. He's what?
He's back giving his physics again, yes.
Oh, really?
I heard about that.
Well, he was in bad health for a while.
Yes, he was, but now
he's back.
He's back.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You guys want to take a break, or you want to just go on?
Promise they'll come back.
Yeah, promise you'll come back. Take 5 minutes.
Yeah, but what if it fills the gap?
That's what I said. That's why this is inherently less conservative. Okay? But you might want to kick in this part of the procedure when you see the market's running away.
So you wouldn't do it inherently at the gap. You would wait and see.
No, it depends on your methodology. You could do either. You could say, I'm going to use this procedure. I'm going to use variant 2. Or I'm not going to use variant 2, I'm going to use variant 1. Because what happens is, this is what happens. You get a gap here, you raise it, maybe you get another one, you raise it, and then zap, comes the inevitable down wave, takes out your stop, blow, okay, gotcha. I knew you were down there. And you were down there, and then I just wondered how hard I had to look for you.
So that's, maybe there's no answer to this question, but if those evil people that are out there to take you out.
The mischief makers.
The mischief makers is this 5 or 6% below the basing point designed to make it hard for them to get you?
Exactly. Did you hear my the first guy Jack Schwager interviewed in Market Wizards is the great commodity trader Bruce I can't remember his last name. Schwager said, "Where do you set your stops?" And he said, "I set them where they're hard to get to." This is hard to get to. This is hard to get to. Now, one of the exercises you will do later in this seminar is you will run a basic point analysis on something, okay? And one of the things you will do is you will compute the risks, okay? And it may be an eye-opener for you, because when your market price is up here and your stock's down here, that's a chunk of dough. But when your market price is down here and your stop is down here, and the down wave comes looking for you and doesn't find you and then goes off, that's when you make $68,000 insured. That's exactly when you make $68,000 insured. Because inevitably the wave gets bigger and bigger and bigger. More and more volatile. So hanging on to the trend is, that's where the big wins come. Is being able to sit those out. Now, you know, I have tried
Sometimes I try. Sometimes I try, have tried to be long here and to be switching tactics. Okay. In other words, I'm basically long the trend, but I see a wave and I say that wave is about as long as they usually are and it's unstable. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start putting on shorts or I'm going to start hedging in another month or something like that. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's okay because nothing works all the time. The only thing that works all the time is lying in politics. Lying, cheating, and stealing. Cheating and stealing are really good. Cheating and stealing will almost... I mean, look at the specialist. I mean. Okay, so... you guys are supposed to do a brief write-up about the first section of the training manual, right? The philosophy? I mean, you're supposed to think about that and make some notes at least. Well, let me have some thoughts. Let me have some thoughts about some paper. I'm not going to... Look, I don't grade homework. You grade homework. And the final exam is when you go out and put your money in the market.
I'll give you my philosophy.
What's that?
And this is all hypothetical rather than a philosophy that's in practice yet. Because I'm very new to the idea of grading. The philosophy that I'm aiming toward is screening stocks by whatever means seems useful. And maybe that's primarily fundamental. Maybe it's buying some advice from some source for screening stocks. I'd like to be able to determine my own entries and exits based on some kind of technical work. And here's the part that I'm very unsure of at the moment. I'd like to be able to do it so it doesn't consume my life.
Bingo.
Which means that I'd like to do it maybe once a week.
You're our ideal student.
You know, I don't want to be in front of the tube every day.
Well, and you don't have to be. Even I have students who, as I say, used to have white knuckles at the screen, and who now run around wheeling and dealing in real estate while they watch their trading, but, you know, out of the corner of their eye. And McGee's whole methodology, in fact, McGee's letter, investment letter that he wrote for 40 years was a weekly letter. It was a weekly letter, and he mailed it out on Friday. People got it on Saturday generally. And they looked at it, and Monday they put in stops, and, you know, that's the reader of this book. Now, the over time it has become clear that you can utilize their methods for real-time trading of soybeans. You can use real-time trading of currency. You can do that. But you don't have to. You can... You see what the... One trade. I mean, I've had people mark this thing up and say, well, you know, I've been out here, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. One trade. I mean, is a 9-year trade long enough for you?
That should work.
Okay. Well, you're going to learn how to do it. Using this procedure, you're going to see how you could have traded the NASDAQ for
for a 90-year trade in the Dow. So there's a variant 3 to this procedure, which allows you to do that. And, you know, you have a broker or you set your computer. I never have figured out how to set my computer to alert me, but you know, you set your stops and you listen to KQED business, what is it? Market week. You know, the
night business review.
Huh?
And we are night business review.
Yeah. No, the what I listen to is
Marketplace.
Comes on, yeah, Marketplace. Right after McNeil Air.
Lewis Rigaudy.
Huh?
Lewis Rigaudy?
No, it's not Lewis. It's I don't know, it's those guys down in Southern California, but you know, they tell you what the market did today, and most of the time you don't care. And the point at which you begin to pay attention is the point at which you hear the frequency increasing. You say, oh, the market's up 100 points. The market's up 200 points. Okay. Oh, better check what's going on here.
So do my comments get at your question about philosophy? Is that what you mean by philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely. That is what I mean by philosophy.
So if I use a stair stop chart on a weekly basis, weekly data, not daily data, does it?
That's variant 3.
It is.
Okay. Using weekly bars instead of daily bars.
Is that in the ebook?
It's in the next edition. It's not in this one right here, but it is in the next edition. That's the plan. And actually, well, I don't know how you see this. I don't know where it's. Here, I'll just, I don't know if you can see. This is the NASDAQ. These are the basic points in the NASDAQ from 1989. Okay, 1989 is the, you go long in 1991 and you get out in 2001. Okay, one trade. Okay. Using basic points in the weekly bars, three bars away instead of 3 days away.
So is it, do I just follow the same rules? Three outside bars? Is that the only difference?
Pretty simple, huh? You'll see this out. Okay, so handouts. GGU. Okay, /GGU/ handouts. .html, and you'll see a menu there. How many of you guys use Macintoshes? All you guys use PCs?
One over there.
No, I use Mac. Yeah, I just, yeah.
There's no trading software.
Well, they'll look up. Okay, so. But Safari keeps locking up. I mean, do you have that trouble for you?
No.
No?
I don't have it.
Maybe there's something to do with this.
Your connection in the going to sleep here.
No, I think it has something to do with
the network.
It has something to do with this website, Prophet, I think, because that's where it always hangs up on me. Okay, so this is what you'll see. Okay, and then right here,
you'll see these are almost, they're all PDFs. Okay? So there'll be more and more stuff put up there as we go on. And there'll even be stuff up there that I don't discuss. But if you can take a look at it, and if you want to discuss it, you can raise it. But like, I'll be putting up the charts. I'll be putting up the charts we looked at today. So here's one of the charts. So you'll see them as PDFs. You can download them, print them, do whatever you want to. And over the course of the seminar, there'll be more and more stuff on there. And as I say, shortly, the next day or so, I will have up these charts of these charts right here. Okay, I'll have the blank charts up, and you'll be able to work them like puzzles and see the results here.
So how do you get the GGU?
Just edwardsmcgee.com/GGU.
Edwardsmcgee.com.
Yeah, right. All of this, this Edwards McGee precedes all these slashes. Okay. So has anybody else saw that? Now you weren't here last week, so you missed. We had a discussion. You know how inside every fat man there's a thin man struggling to get out, or what is it? Inside every thin man there's a fat man struggling. I forget which it is. Well, inside all the investors here, they're traders struggling to get out. So the purpose of this exercise, the purpose of your exploring your philosophy and your personality and your conceptual bases and aims and objectives and everything if you don't do this exercise, you're going to go into the market, and the market's going to give you a few lessons, and then you're going to do the exercise. Capish? So, all right. So, everybody that put something on paper for the exercise, stick up a hand. There's one. There's somebody that thought about it. Anybody here? Okay. So next time I'd like to see all hands go up, and I'd like to have some thought about it. Brett?
Yeah, I actually have been thinking about it.
You actually have
to. But I haven't put anything on paper. Okay. Similar. I've got a couple of things that I've been trying to do. First off, I do trade oil mostly physical for a living. But we do, there's some issues about hedging and that sort of thing, which we would like to address. I would like to address. So I'm sort of torn between this personal interest of my personal investing, which I probably outweighs my the other because of there are situations or there are systems in place. Systems, but there are
procedures in place.
Believe it or not, the systems are lacking.
Maybe do believe. I know. I got it. All surprise.
I've been thinking about. Well, it'd be great to explore a system related to work, but on the other side, I also trade in markets that certainly would not be considered liquid comparatively. You're trading Singapore. The Singapore paper for IF-180 fuel, you're not going to find the kind of liquidity that you probably would like to. And as a result, the market trending is really wacko. It will trend, but it's very, very all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about that, but on the other side, on a personal level, I would like to obviously start to trading as an investment. I am in a situation where I'm not going to obviously have the time to look at the markets or individual stocks all day long, but I am in a situation that I have this stuff up on the screen and I can access this stuff fairly readily, throughout the day. So I'm thinking that I could look at more of a shorter term trading approach than just jumping in and out of the market on a monthly basis, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But my biggest concern too is being able to to identify. I do right now. I go through and I'm looking at different stocks. I'll even build charts on different stocks and that sort of thing. But I haven't really jumped into it. I've been just sort of exploring and trying to get some read on some of what's going on in the market. Mm-hmm. I guess jumping in is the hardest thing to do in certain circumstances.
Well, I think once you, first of all, I think that paper trading it's like ice skating and swimming, but it's certainly paper trading is a valuable process.
Yeah.
And it may get you to that point where you develop confidence. I mean, most people paper trade, they don't know what the goddamn hell they're doing to begin with. So they trade paper trading for a while, they say, I'm paper trading, so I'm going to trade. But with what you're seeing here, you should begin to be able to start developing a discipline, a methodology to guide you in how you do it. You say, I could always be sidetracked from whatever we're talking about that day. You say, hey, I want to talk about how you get into something. Well, okay. That's what you want to talk about? But once you have developed some confidence, once you have some experience with methodology, whether it's chart reading or moving average or turtle system,
I think I've actually started that. I mean, because we have traded papers, single papers, if you will, and I have found that you're always lacking the technical approach. We've always depended on the fundamental aspects of that. And the fundamental means you talk to the guys in Singapore and say, what's the market doing? Where it's going? And notoriously, they'll tell you one thing, and then before you know it, just lost your ass on your paper.
Yeah, right.
And,
and why should they have told you the truth? You're supposed to do the opposite of what
right. I call it the contrarian training approach.
Yeah, right.
But in any case, what I was going to mention is that I have been watching the charts now, and New York 1% and all of these different markets.
Yeah.
And I've really started to build confidence in not knowing where it's going to go necessarily, but
where it is.
Where it is now, and
yeah.
Understanding, having a better feel of what's going on, And it's surprising, even though I haven't been doing it that long, I'm really building confidence in knowing. Having a good feel of where the market is.
It's inevitable. You keep looking at charts, and the more you look at them, the more you mark them up, the more you analyze them, the more you see. Okay? Not that you have to see every little thing. Okay? I mean, if all you see is a ruler at the bottom of the wave lows, you've already seen more than most people.
Yeah.
Okay? So you start working that ruler, and after a while you look at it and you say, hey, that's breaking up. You look at it a little while later and say, yeah, it broke out. It's like this right here. I mean, the S&P chart we're looking at. Hey, it hasn't broken out, but it's on the verge of breaking out. Okay? It hasn't confirmed the breakout yet, but a speculator is buying right now. Okay.
Now, there are a lot of people out there who are shorting it. You know what the greatest markets in the world are? The greatest markets in the world are when the professionals are wrong. Which, this is, remember I told you that one of the coming attractions of this course was the fishing rule? You know what the fishing rule is? You know what the fishing rule is? You fish?
I do.
Well, you must know the fishing rule then. What percentage of the fishermen catch what percentage of the fish?
You mean in reality or in the stories?
In reality. In reality, 15% of the fishermen catch 85% of the fish. So, which percentage do you want to be in?
Is it really 15% for traders, or more like 5% for traders?
Well, it might be 5%. It could well be 5%. Catch 85%. There's probably a range there. 5 to 15% of the fishermen catch 85% of the fish. But when that 5 to 15% is wrong, it's like 1987. 70% of my clientele was wiped out in 3 days. The CBOE said that 2/3 of market maker capital had been destroyed. You know why? The market was overbought, so they sold naked puts. I had one client who lost $57 million. In the same day, while he was losing $57 million, I had a tool that I was charging market makers $500 a month for that put us long straddles during the crash. And they couldn't understand it or didn't want to pay $500 for it.
I heard that you couldn't get any options trades during the crash. Like, the market makers were just, they weren't even answering the phone.
Oh, yeah, right. The phones didn't work.
they're just so priced out of, everything was just so out of whack.
And oh, yeah, there were guys throwing up on the floor. Well, okay, so... let's see. Oh, okay. Next week, I'm going to talk about systems and let's say ideal systems and real world systems and. I'm not, okay, I think you guys may want to talk about this basic points of procedure and about stair stops, which is okay if you want to do that. But I don't intend to talk about it next week. So get your thoughts together. I also get your thoughts together on the first section of the book here, because the last session of this seminar belongs to you. It's where you're going to stand up in front of your colleagues here and tell them what's in your systems notebook. You're going to be a little embarrassed if there's nothing in it. You're going to be really embarrassed if there's nothing in it and you go out in the market and ignore everything that you should have put in it. So real interesting week next week. We're going to look at pyramiding systems and position building systems and scaling in, scaling out, and all those good things. And let's see, maybe some other stuff too. Who knows? Oh, you guys have got to get together and tell. Do I have one of these from everybody? Okay. You guys have got to get together and tell me what Saturday you want to do a workshop. Because the workshop, we can go into the computer lab, and you're talking about, you know, getting confidence in doing this. You go to the computer lab, you pick stocks that you want to analyze, you analyze them. I look at them and I say, well, okay, look, there's a diamond there, there's a triangle there, there's a this there, there's a trend there, there's a whatever there. And it's, you know, it's hands-on analysis. It's a lot of fun, and it's indispensable.
Well, there was, I didn't get any, like, ways of contacting you.
Yeah, you know, I did respond to your email, but for whatever reason, I didn't go through it. The reply all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why don't we just...
All right. I'm gonna email all of you the list of email addresses.
Yeah.
And then you'll say, here's the Saturday I'd like to get together and do this workshop. Okay. Any questions, comments? Is this? You know, I always like to ask people. Sometimes. You know, I go through this process, and one of the things that's most delightful about teaching is, you know, sometimes you see somebody just enlightened. So, if you have a moment of enlightenment, you know, let me know, because it happens.
The age of enlightenment, yes.
The age of enlightenment.
Thinking about what you were saying about using technical analysis with fundamental analysis, and I remember Hank said he went to Japan for some seminar back when the Japanese market was just, you know, at the worst point. You know, people were in a bear market for, what, I don't know, 15 years.
Yeah, they're right here.
He's like, oh, the mood was just terrible. He's like, but there was this one guy that said, they were talking about fundamental analysis and technical analysis. He says, it's like they're both, the two are like a blind man and a man in a wheelchair. By themselves, they don't work at all, but together you can go somewhere. That was fun.
Okay,
let's see. Is there
any reading assignment?
Yeah, because then you know when that big move is going to happen.
Well, there's a general reading assignment, which is sometime over the next week or maybe longer, I'm going to ask you what you know about the language of the market. That's what the first part of this book is about. It's about triangles. It's about what these patterns mean. That people keep talking about. Say, oh, there's a head and shoulders, oh, there's this. So you want to get some background in that. If you already have a background in it, good. If you don't, then you should start reading something in every section of the book, all those patterns, because they are... That's like Grandfather Brown, or whatever his name is, walking through the forest and says, there's a cyclamen, or there's a sycamore, or there's a tulip, or there's a wild iris, or there's a pine cone. It's part of the forest. Okay? So you gotta, and it speaks to you. But it can't speak to you if you don't do your homework. Right? Because if you don't do your homework, you can't read. So this is the ABCs, is the grammar of the market, it's the language of the market. A capito? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see.
I'm
going to get you the case. And you're going to
mail everybody that, or
if anybody wants it, sure, I'll mail it off.
Yeah, I'd like to.
You want a couple?
Yeah. Maybe I'll get Bill. I can't believe yours is not better than mine.
See.